and welcome back to the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinzing, episode 197. This is the podcast about American flowers and the people who grow and design with them. It's all about making a conscious choice, and I invite you to join the conversation and the creative community. This podcast is brought to you by slowflowers.com, the free nationwide online directory to florists, shops, and studios who design with American-grown flowers, and to the farms that grow those blooms. It's the conscious choice for buying and sending flowers. And a special thanks to our lead sponsor for 2015, the California Cut Flower Commission, committed to making a difference as an advocate for American-grown flowers. Learn more at ccfc.org. This week, we have lots of great news to share, and I hope you find the episode stimulating as you think of new ways to promote your own floral endeavors. First up, I'm unveiling the second infographic in the Slow Flowers series. This piece is called Get Your Local On, and it endeavors to capture our philosophy of domestic flower sourcing in a single snapshot. I don't believe in the black and white of things. Life is just more chaotic than that, especially when you're dealing with Mother Nature, the climate, environmental forces, and a living plant. However, this visual guide explores the continuum from local and regional sourcing to national domestic sourcing. As I've said many times, and I can't take credit for this, but I do like to repeat it, I recommend taking a pebble-in-the-pond approach to floral sourcing. Please check out deborahprinzing.com for a preview of Get Your Local On. And if you have a use for this graphic in your own business, please feel free to download the digital file, which I'll provide at my website. June is here, and I wanted also to share my personal invitation for you to join the third Field to Vase Dinner, which Slow Flowers is co-hosting at flower farms across the country. This month's event will take place on Friday, June 19th at Pajaroso Flower Farm in Watsonville, California, which is in the Monterey Bay area. Rose farmer Paul Furman is our host, and Teresa Sabancaya of Bonnie Dune Garden Company, a past guest of this podcast, is the celebrity floral designer who will use all local flowers to install an insanely beautiful tablescape for the meal. Tickets for this amazing floral-centric experience are $175, but I want to offer listeners of this podcast a special promotional code to save $35 off the ticket price. Visit deborahprinzing.com and see my show notes for today's podcast to get that promotional code. And don't worry if you can't make it to Monterey Bay in June. There are dinners scheduled on flower farms coming up now through October. So check the full schedule for dates that will celebrate local flowers in Colorado, New York, Washington, D.C., and Virginia, Washington State, Oregon, California, and Michigan. Okay, now to our guest. Please meet Helen Evans, Director of Business Development and Support at London's Covent Garden Market Authority. When I was in London last month, Helen graciously toured me through New Covent Garden Market, the premier center for wholesale cut flowers and plants in London's Vauxhall District. New Covent Garden Market is the largest fruit, vegetable, and flower market in the UK. They are passionate about food and passionate about flowers, and they pride themselves on being the focus for food and flowers in London. With over 200 vendors employing over 2,500 people, the market supplies 40% of all fresh fruit and vegetables eaten outside of the home in London and is used as a resource by 75% of London florists. Helen is one of the key persons behind the very exciting program called British Flowers Week, which will enter its third campaign beginning next week, Monday, June 15th. Listen along as we discuss the state of domestic flowers in the UK, and you'll find many parallels to what's happening here in the US. On my early morning visit, while walking through the floors of the enormous warehouse, I learned from Helen that only 10 to 15% of flowers sold at New Covent Garden are British grown. Yet the demand and the quantities to supply them are increasing as the wave of homegrown sentiment sweeps through the country, much as we're seeing with American-grown products. It was completely fortuitous that two slowflowers.com members joined us that morning, Jimmy Lohr and Jonathan Weber of Green Sinner in Pittsburgh, also podcast guests, were on their own Chelsea London excursion. Helen graciously included them in the visit. When we sat down for tea and I turned on the recorder, it led to a completely impromptu interview. And you'll hear Jimmy and Jonathan's voices jumping in to comment. And that added to the fun of the conversation.
This is the actual third British Flowers Week, but we've been looking to actively support British Flowers probably since 2007. I mean, earlier in the morning we had a quick conversation with one of the guys here, Graham, and, you know, as Graham said, in the early 80s, British Flowers were the bedrock of what was sold here. Wow. And what we've actually seen is two things have happened since then. One is that many of the big growers now supply for the supermarkets. So they just want one contract for stuff, and they're probably only growing about 12 varieties. So you're seeing the...
It's so funny you say that, because I call it the Dirty Dozen.
Yep.
And I was
absolutely sort
of joking.
Nope. It's partly because supermarkets want consistency. It's partly because the great British public doesn't actually know the names of a lot of flowers. So they don't want to buy something that they don't know the name of it because they feel uncomfortable. They don't know how it's going to last. So on the one side, you've seen the big growers get bigger and just supply the supermarkets. And on the other side, what you've seen is the smaller growers continuing to supply the wholesale market. Their age profile is getting a lot higher, and it's a lot more economic to actually grow houses than grow flowers.
Yes.
And for the next generation, why would they be crazy enough to grow? Because I met Jimmy from Green Sinner just a few seconds ago, and we were talking about how crazy it is to be a florist. Well, I think it's the same for growers. Yeah. You can only do it because you really believe in the product.
So, but you're so right about the cost that unless you're in a really rural area, maybe your real estate doesn't cost, you know, isn't valuable. But I know in California, a lot of the growers are watching real estate take over their acreage. And I'm sure that's the case in lots of areas where it's more profitable to grow a house.
Absolutely.
So the British growers kind of have lost their generational
legacy. I think though at the same time, since about 2007, I've been doing a lot of work on local food and encouraging local food growers to think about the market again. Many of them are big growers who are supplying the supermarkets, but we're saying, hey, you could grow a premium product. And on our food side, most of that food is going into restaurants and hotels where you can get that premium because it's a different product.
It's a couture
product.
For
example, yeah. A British grower could grow Cavolo Nero rather than importing it from Italy. So we've started that on the food side, and there are huge parallels with flowers, I think. And we've seen today, we saw some awe-inspiring Nigella. It was Dutch. But it could easily be grown over here.
Right. And I was asking how I could I get my hand on the seed. I
mean, absolutely.
It's just, but we did see beautiful British.
And I think
sweet peas and...
The sweet peas are lovely. What we have is some really good growers who grow just particular varieties. One of the other wholesalers in here, he had some really very indifferent Alstroemeria. And I sort of said, it's not great, is it? And he said, no. So I said, why have you got it? And he said, because he's the best peony grower in the world. Can't grow anything else, but I would kill for his peonies. So I have to take his other stuff.
Oh, how funny.
So you get them where they're really strong
they're
in particular areas.
Yeah.
You know, callas, sweet peas, peonies, a lot of what I call those hero products.
Right.
The things that really make people's eyes go ding, you know. But we're also seeing growers like Rosemary Morton that Graham was talking about, who are growing a whole range of herbs for floristry. So not culinary. So you've got a nice long stem that you can actually do something with rather than just the odd little leaf. So with the mint, you know, it's the fragrance.
Right.
And her speciality is obviously English garden roses.
I was gonna say, her garden inspired us. There was Centhranthus rubrum and euphorbia and then the mint and the sweet peas. But the roses were too early.
It's too cold at the moment, so the roses have all been held back.
So let's go back to British Flowers Week. So how did that all come about?
So we recognised that there was a real interest in British. We were hearing a lot of people asking for British. And one of the things is on a stand, unless you're a regular market customer, it's quite difficult to know what is British, what's Dutch. And we don't have a budget. So we decided if we were going to do something, we'd use social media. And florists, I guess because a lot of them work by themselves, are all over social media, whether it's blogging, Instagram, Pinterest, Twitter. It's that network because, you know, you start to go stir crazy when you're still in the workshop at 4 o'clock in the morning and then you haven't got any sleep and you just sort of tweet, ugh, help.
And you doubt everything. And yeah, this is terrible. And then you put it out there and the universe says, that's beautiful.
It's that mutual support, it's that inspiration, it's fantastic. I mean,
so you tapped into that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, one of the things that we've had is people say British flowers shouldn't be just for a week. Absolutely, totally agree. But if you're going to get media on your side, the media aren't interested in something 52 weeks a year. You've got to do it really intense in a big splash and feed them something.
Absolutely.
Feed them a story.
Right.
And I think one of the most exciting parts of my job here is that I want to promote the wholesalers here are selling flowers. Their customers are our biggest ambassador. And from day one, every single customer, great and small, are willing to give us their time and their creativity for free and to get behind things like British flowers. So the concept was that we would take five flowers and five designers and each day reveal what they have done with those designs. Mm. So it's everything from Rebel Rebel creating a dress with a peacock tail made of delphiniums through to, I think, Shane Connolly, who does the work. Yeah. You know, with sweet peas. So each year we've done that. Five different flowers, and particularly flowers that maybe are less fashionable, that people, for example, last year you were talking about the work of ONS on Hillias. They took Lysianthus, which a lot of people just think of as a fairly, it doesn't have a huge design profile.
It's kind of a volume plant, a flower that...
I think it's absolutely fabulous. Yeah. The colors.
When it's fresh, it's life-changing.
It is.
And seriously, beautiful, elegant lines and details.
Absolutely. But somehow it's just never got anybody behind it to look at it with those fresh eyes. They created the most awe-inspiring headdress. And Liz Anderson, who you met at Chelsea yesterday, is absolutely amazing. And she managed to place that in the Telegraph. So we got the Saturday Telegraph saying, this is what's happening next week. Got picked up by, you know, Homes and Gardens, by the RHS, by loads of people. And that's the power of a social network.
Right.
Really, really strong imagery.
Right.
That does cost me.
Right.
But the designers give up their time for nothing.
That's donated, right.
But then equally they get great PR.
Absolutely.
And actually, but florists do it because they love the flower, they want to support the growers, and it's just a win-win.
And so the week is in June, right?
Yeah.
And is it always, has it always been like June 15th or something like that? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously we're in Chelsea week at the moment. We felt that to compete with Chelsea would not be good because the media is just saturated by Chelsea.
Absolutely.
We wouldn't make. And by shifting it to June, we're at the peak of our season.
When all the best product is available.
This is Chelsea week, but Rosemary's still not managed to get her roses to market. By June, we should be on full flush of everything. So we've got the pick of British flowers.
And so when the media get their imagination gets captured, do you feel like the sort of trickle down result is that the grocery stores and the mass market retailers as well as the consumer are saying, hey, I want British flowers and how can I get my hands on these?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're going to meet Jill Hodgson later. We've got a wonderful network, Flowers from the Farm, of local artisan growers.
Yes, she's been on the podcast.
And they're very, very supportive of it.
So that's the small growers.
Yeah.
Okay.
And regional florists as well, who see the opportunity to use this week to promote British, but also to raise their own profile within their local community. And very often, particularly in the more regional areas, they have flower growers in that area. So it's about supporting their local economy.
So it could be
so it's very, very
hubs.
Grassroots. And if you like, we can kickstart it in the metropolis, but it's reinvented at a local level, suitable for their local market.
Perfect.
And we provide a toolkit. We give guidance on how to contact your local press, the local radio station.
And you have a beautiful website.
And
you maintain
this
that?
Year, yep, we actually created a standalone website, and we also use it as a platform to encourage people to send in their photos of British flowers. It gets showcased on there. We've created a logo, as I say, a media PR toolkit. So all the resources are there. And then also for the consumer, where you can buy local flowers.
Which is all about what I care
and
about.
And it's
yeah.
about promoting local florists.
Right.
So the whole thing is a virtuous circle. The flowers should be grown in this country and sold by an independent florist within your local community.
Right.
So you keep all of that within your own area.
Right.
And it makes you take ownership of that area. I mean, it's a
brilliant.
Perfect thing. So it will work at a local level, whether it be Cornwall in the southwest up to Scotland in the north. And every area will do it with a different twist. So in London, we're very lucky at New Covent Garden Market to have a lot of the leading florists based here. But they will work with their clients. Very often people give lip service to local flowers, but they don't actually understand that you need to buy differently and have a slightly different approach because you might not know what's available that week. So you cannot specify, if you took a food example, you cannot specify that you will have that on the menu, as it
right.
were, for 6 weeks.
Right.
Because suddenly it might get really cold and the asparagus hasn't grown that week. You go with what's best. You have to let go a little bit. You have to lose control a little bit. And actually, what you get back is, oh my God, I didn't expect to see that. It is fabulous. And I don't care what I was planning. I got to have those, I don't know, Black Widow Iris. And it's just going to be Black Widow Iris for a week.
Helen,
and
I love your
them.
Enthusiasm.
Well, because I'm not
the
a
perfect
florist.
Ambassador.
I'm not a florist, but I come in here every day and you go, oh my God. And it's just that surprise. It's... In our lives, everything's so controlled. We try and control everything, and the best florists know that they're dealing with nature.
Last week, I taught a class at the conservatory, and part of the deal with this class is seasonal arranging and what's in season. I literally tell the farm, send me stuff. I don't want to know what you're going to send me. Just surprise me, and I'll make something in front of this class. And they sent me a green that I have no idea what it is. And we've looked and we've figured, we even asked the farm in Goose Creek uh-huh. come back to us. And
so
they were
like
I haven't heard back from us because we were coming to the UK. And I was like, this is beautiful. This is magical. And all the students were like, what is this? And I was like, I have no idea.
But let's make pretty.
But let's make beautiful things with it. And you were saying about people don't know the names. Like for me, like I don't understand that. Why do we need to know the names? Know that it's beautiful. Know yeah. that it's there and it's beautiful.
I don't know what it's like in the States, but in this country, colleges... It's the naming of the parts. It's back to that control
yes,
thing.
Yes.
If you've got the name,
you
know, like in magic, you know, if you can name the secret name, you
Correct.
Control the thing. It doesn't work that way. And colleges are obsessed with, they have to know the names, they have to know the Latin names, so that there's consistency when you order, that you always get the same thing.
But that's not the magic that I make.
No,
and
you want to open that box, and I didn't order that, but, you know.
My whole thing is, like, I like to work with nature, not against it. And that's what I feel like so many times with the commercial products is it's against nature. It's about forcing things that don't want to grow and everything. And like why people don't understand why there's a peony season.
Right.
And I was like, you just can't lie to them.
Yeah.
You can't lie
no,
to them.
I mean, we have people who have grown up expecting everything 12 months of the year.
Yeah.
Correct.
And the thing I always say to them is with peonies, yes, you can absolutely get peonies in February. And I worked with somebody whose family grew those peonies. They're in Tasmania, right? It's the other side of the world. Now, to peonies to this country in February, the cost and that journey for those poor peonies. You know, so when they get here, you are paying shed loads of money for something that bluntly is crap.
Right.
Yes.
Why would you do that?
Right.
Why wouldn't you wait until now when you can fill your arms with peonies for not much money? Certainly not compared to what they are.
And for us back in Pittsburgh, it's Peony and Baptisia Week, which we're missing because we're here. So my team is on like Baptisia and Peony Week because Baptisia is my absolute favorite flower. And
it's so funny.
I'm missing it.
I love the foliage.
I'm missing it. Oh, yes.
Yeah,
I think you turned us on to that.
It's good stuff. It's good stuff. So I am going to predict that this two gentlemen here at the table and me, little old me, we're going to figure out how to do American Flower Week. And Liz and I were brainstorming just like in a casual conversation. Wouldn't it be great if we could have something at the same exact week as British Flowers Week and just kind of even feed off of each other and promote that. Both countries are in the midst of this international floral cultural industrial complex, trying to capture and recapture that domestic power of who's growing flower that is local and is seasonal, and how are the floral artists using it. And there is a lot of British pride in that and American pride in that. If you can get the message across to the consumer, if they understand it. Like you were saying, maybe they don't because they only know 12 flowers.
Yeah.
So the branding is, British Flowers Week is a branding strategy that makes a lot of sense. And you partner with other people like the farmer groups.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Okay. Absolutely. I mean, you know, it's counterintuitive in a way because obviously at one level, I just want to encourage people to buy flowers from this market.
Right.
But I need to make sure that this market has the supply of flowers that the customer wants. And one of the really exciting parts of my job is talking to the growers and to the florists, and the market's the bit in the middle. And I've always said we should not be about moving a box. We should be about moving that information up and down the supply chain. So a florist will say, I love this, but you know, I much preferred that burnt orange, or, you know, I need a longer stem, or I need it on a Wednesday, not a Tuesday. And the farmer needs to understand that. And we can be the conduit, the hub that passes that up and down.
So New Covent Garden is the information hub.
Absolutely. And that's what we see.
I think that information is the most important part in those relationships, especially with local flowers, to know what's actually growing and what's going to be ready and all those sorts of things. And then right down to the consumer, too, so that
they know what they're buying.
What they're buying and
absolutely.
What to ask for.
And we produced last year a seasonal flower chart to show what's available when. And it's got the most enormous caveat that says something along the lines of, you know, this is when we say it should be growing, but it may have its own ideas. You know, it's just to give you that rough idea. So at least you know peonies don't grow in February. And it might say that they come on stream in May, but if it's cold, it will slip.
The difference, I think, is that England is a country that is pretty much the same. How many growing zones do you have? I mean, compared to the U.S., where we have such extremes from Florida to Alaska,
I mean, it is more consistent. Well, there is still a big difference. For example, probably the biggest British flower in terms of recognition and sales would be something like a daffodil.
Really?
And that will start, you know, in the middle of winter.
Right.
Narcissi, scented narcissi will start to come in from the Scilly Isles, which are way off the west coast of this country, and they're in the Gulf Stream, so they get a different climate. They have a microclimate. They'll start sending in scented narcissi in October.
Wow.
So then you move through and you start to get the daffodils coming in, and then the end of the daffodil season, which we're sort of coming up to now, so we're in May, will be Scotland.
And
so we do have different climates, but nowhere near the extent of the states. I mean, the whole of the UK would fit into one to Texas, probably. So yeah, there are differences.
That's an advantage, in a way. That's an advantage for you to have kind of a... You could have one message and hit almost all consumers in the country, and they would almost all be able to buy daffodils
and certainly
at the same time.
Certainly by going with June for us, something will be available locally. I mean, London, the southeast tends to be 2 weeks early in terms of the season for the rest of the country.
Can you just talk a little bit, Helen, about, I know we've got to keep an eye on the clock, but New Covent Garden Market, and you just describe that it's actually owned by the City of London, or how that all came together?
Covent Garden Market, the old Covent Garden Market, which was in the centre of London, basically was there since medieval times. And really, since the time of Charles Dickens, there were campaigns for it to move, because it was considered to be noisy, dirty, disreputable, clogging up the streets. So in a very British way, nothing really happened until the 1960s, when the government sort of decided, 100 years on, I think we need to do something. The only way we're going to solve this problem is by actually taking the market into public ownership.
I see.
Out of private hands.
And when it was back in Dickens' time, this is just where all the farmers would bring their produce to the city to sell.
Yeah, okay. And increasingly, as railways started to develop, product was imported, and obviously a lot would come into the Port of London, so, you know, pineapples and stuff like that. But up until the 60s, probably the most exotic flower would be mimosa, which would come up by rail from the south of France.
Wow.
But most of the flower in the market would be British.
Okay.
So in the 60s, they decided they'd set up an organisation to run the market with a remit to move it out of the centre of London. And they set up an organisation called Covent Garden Market Authority, which I work for, set up in 61 by Acts of Parliament. And by 1974, we built the market here in Vauxhall and moved. So that only took 13 years. So we were getting quicker all the time. So we're a public body. We report to DEFRA, which is our Department of Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, used to be the Ministry of Agriculture. And we are the only market that reports to central government. And I see our role increasingly being one of educating the public. We're already soon going to be announcing a partnership with a leading horticultural college in London about running forestry apprenticeships from the market.
Oh, wow. Which has never been done before. Or maybe informally.
The big difference about these apprenticeships is they are actively looking for industry to set what the qualifications should be. So rather than just churning out florists with college criteria, so they know how to wire stuff and do what industry wants. I don't know if it's the same for you guys, but if you've got to turn 200 table decorations out for a big event, you want somebody who's fluid and quick and fluent, and who isn't agonising over, you know, they're very different skills, they're very different attitudes. So this is about somebody working with the florist 4 days a week, and then a day a week in college. But what they do in college is being dictated by the industry. So industry can actually say what they think are the skills that they need.
That's exciting.
That's a huge difference. So again, this is about us being that facilitator. We talked about grower and florist, but also florist and education provider. So when we have the new market finally, the really exciting bit 7 years on is that there will be a retail market as well.
Wait, say that again.
So there will be a retail market. So
yeah, for the consumer.
So if you look at flowers, we will have a little roof garden, but we're not really going to be growing in anything. But you can buy, you can make, you can sell, you can learn, and you can share. All of that in one place. So we want to be If you think of flowers, if you think of food, you would think of us.
Wow.
It'll be a new destination for people to come to. If you're in London, you'll probably visit somewhere like Borough Market.
I want a t-shirt. I'm just letting you know now. I'm going to pre-order, the whole
I learned
my guys are coming over we went for through, the opening party.
When we went through immigration, the woman in immigration said that she was encouraging me to go be a loud, tacky American. So I'm signing up for a t-shirt right now. She welcomed me
You can help design the t-shirt.
You'll be a guest designer.
Absolutely.
So I love what you're saying. Like, you're really just creating a heart for the industry and everything.
Yeah.
And, like, an information hub and also...
believe that we've got a big issue. We talked about the lack of knowledge amongst the general public on flowers. I think the other thing that florists, if you forgive me, are really bad at is promoting their own industry and the skills of a florist. You ask me, can the general public come in here? I can't stop them because we're set up by Acts of Parliament to be a public market.
Oh, did they wander in?
And they wander in, and it's the biggest single issue that florists have. And the call I dread is, I'm getting married. Can I come to the market to buy flowers? So the reply goes, yes. £5 entry. Quantities are bigger than you'd buy at a florist. There are no prices displayed. The prices vary day to day, stand to stand. Whatever price is quoted to you is excluding VAT, so you need to add 20%. Are you feeling really encouraged by this? So I will tell them the truth,
yeah.
But I'm not going to make it easy for them.
Right.
And anybody who looks to do their wedding, I suppose there are two things. One, they're an idiot.
Yeah.
who would want to be moving water on the day of their wedding,
Heavy water.
Secondly, for a florist, that actually isn't an order that you want because this is somebody on so tight a budget.
It's the DIY.
They don't value the flowers. Or they've always loved doing flowers. Yeah.
It's just like, I'm a people person.
But you don't love doing flowers on 75 tables.
And do they realise that they've got to ship them out of the hotel at the end?
Yes.
And if they're getting married in a church, there could be two weddings in that church that day. How are they going to get them in and out? And you just think, okay, that's fine. As I always say, my uncle's got a camera. I would never have let him take the wedding photos. So I think there's a lot that needs to be done to get people to value the skill of a florist and what they do, which is way beyond just the artistic stuff.
Right.
They are event planners.
That's what these guys do.
But the other thing is to support local florists. And I think there's a lot that we could do to champion that. So in a way, back to British Flowers, for me, it's a way in which we can bring it back to supporting local, to going to your florist shop because they're about something different to the supermarket. And it's about those values.
Right.
And I really think it's something that we want to get involved with the college as well. Florists have skills. When I go to my hairdresser, I might not actually be interested in the certificates on her wall, but I do want to know that if she's going to, not that I do colour my hair, but if she's going to use a chemical, that she actually knows what she's doing and I'm not going to end up with bald patches. And, that's quite dramatic for an individual, but with a florist, if they're in charge of your event, that's huge. They're putting their whole emotional security about that event in a florist's hands.
You have one chance to get it right.
And and that florist is actually a counsellor to them very often. Whether it be a wedding or a funeral, they're on this emotional roller coaster. But even if it's a big party, it's a big thing for these guys. They want somebody who's actually going to go, there, it's right, it's okay. They will come and they will love you. And you do look beautiful. And this is, but that's what you guys are doing.
Helen, and I love your passion.
I'll be honest with you. Part of our business is, I always said, like, it isn't that I'm selling flowers. We sell experiences.
Absolutely.
And so for us, we're a farmer, we're a grower as well. And to walk people through the gardens, actually talk about stuff and talk about beauty and what we create. And I'm a big fan of creating place. So we're Western Pennsylvania. I love the idea of doing things that are mountain or in the cities, and that slightly organic feeling. And just so many other people in the industry that don't get that emotional element. Look at my cell phone number. So at 2 a.m, when you're a bride and you're doubting the color choices you've made, tell me, just call me.
You don't really like that, do you?
I do. I just call me, we'll talk about it. He doesn't do that. Hold
no. So, Helen, I missed on the recording the date of this new unveiling of the grand opening that we're all going to come to? When is that?
Well, the flower market will move the back end of next year. And we will have this new building that will have an educational facility in 2017.
Okay.
But the actual retail market, where I want to encourage the public to come and actually buy flowers, probably won't be until 2022.
Okay.
Unless I can steal some space off the developer meanwhile and pop up and stuff like that. So we're going to be quite creative.
But you're kind of doing this on a wonderful timeline, because the educational center will be established by the time you open the doors to the public. So there'll be programming and a logical sort of path for people to take.
And one of the other things, I don't know, I can't see whether they're in this morning or whatever, but you must look up Floral Angels,
okay,
which came from, I believe, Canada, but we've got a fabulous charity. We gave them space here, who basically, from the event industry, the flowers are brought back after the event's demounted. And what they do is they remake those flowers into bouquets for homeless shelters, for battered wives hostels, for hospices, for wherever flowers are going to make a difference to people's lives.
Wonderful.
And I think that's something that's actually come out of the industry. And I just think that's fantastic, that you can turn to your client and say, we can create this event for you, but what you've done will go on and spread that joy like the ripples. And they are the most amazing team of volunteers.
That's cool.
We do that not just for business purposes, but also for personal reasons.
Yeah.
The joy that I can share.
Yeah.
Like, so,
and
so much of the event work.
Twice.
Yes. And so much for event work. For event work, we have that beautiful moment and that experience. And for most people, they are interested in taking the flowers. Most people aren't interested in that. And then the ability to pass along that beauty to, we do a lot with senior citizens. I love that feeling.
And two different ends of the spectrum. You know, you're doing your high end, you know, the big frock, the black tie, and then the next day you've got people who, you know, the whole pace of life is very, very different, but those flowers will mean something to them because they bring back memories and, they bring the outside in. It's
I
fabulous.
Love that. Thank you so much for this tour and this marathon tour. I'm so sorry you have another meeting to go to.
I know, so am I.
I love how Helen describes the ambitious vision for New Covent Garden Market to become a destination where people can buy, make, sell, learn, and share. That mission is one I don't always see happening with any intentionality at U.S. wholesale markets. Although I have to say it is very much in line with the mission of the farmer-owned Seattle Wholesale Growers Market, where I serve on the board. Yet, with just a few changes of focus, there could be no reason why any wholesaler in our country couldn't pull this off. I know we're in the midst of a huge cultural shift in how flowers are sourced and marketed, and those who read the tea leaves and shift more quickly will be the ones who get to redefine the industry practices that others will emulate. As you could tell by the end of my conversation with Helen, I was so thoroughly inspired to launch American Flowers Week. So stay tuned for news on that big dream. And a note to the men from Green Center. As my witnesses, you too are in on that dream too. Here's a bit more about British Flowers Week. And please visit deborahprinzing.com, where I will have links and photos that will show you how exciting this program is. British Flowers Week is the brainchild of the team at New Covent Garden Flower Market, the UK's largest flower market, and the hub for British-grown flowers and foliage for centuries. Originally designed in 2013 as a social media campaign for the floristry trade, hashtag British Flowers Week was quickly picked up by florists, growers, wholesalers, and the media across the length and breadth of Britain. Last year, the hashtag British Flowers Week achieved a staggering Twitter reach of 1.4 million, with British Flowers content posted online, on social media, in print, and on the radio. This year's campaign, which, as I said, launches June 15th, will involve the British Flowers Week photo shoot online and on social media. There will be an event at the Garden Museum. There'll be displays at RHS Harlow Carr, as well as flower farm tours, flower workshops, flower demos, school flower crown days across the country, and more. Starting next week, one new image will be revealed to the media each day, and I'll be sure to share these on the Slow Flowers Facebook page as well as at deborahprinzing.com. You can follow along by searching for the hashtag British Flowers Week as well. And please join me next week on June 17th for the second podcast episode devoted to British flowers. in which you'll meet Sarah Statham of Simply By Arrangement, a floral designer and educator who is active in the British Flowers Week activities taking place in the Yorkshire region. She will have even more photographs and stories to share about the distinctly local and regional efforts of the flower farmers and florists in Yorkshire as a way to take the conversation out into the UK to differentiate from what has been otherwise a mostly London-centric campaign. Thanks again for joining me today for another wonderful conversation. I am devoted to celebrating American flowers and the designers and farmers who are changing this entire industry for the better. But I'm also thrilled to introduce you to ways we can borrow ideas and inspiration from places like the UK, where many parallels occur between our two marketplaces. Listeners like you have downloaded this podcast more than 52,000 times. Thank you to each and every one of you for listening, commenting, and sharing. It means so much. Until next week, please join me in putting more American-grown flowers on the table, one vase at a time. And if you like what you hear, please consider logging onto iTunes and posting a listener review. The content and opinions expressed here are either mine alone or those of my guests alone, independent of any podcast sponsor or other person, company, or organization. The Slow Flowers podcast is engineered and edited by Andrew Wheatley and Hannah Holtgeertz. Learn more about their work at shellandtree.com.